Hi, everyone, for a new episode of the Electric Podcast. I'm Fred Lambert, your host, and I'm joined by Seth Winchell. How are you doing this week, Seth?
Little nuts, but still here.
Yes. Oh, yeah. This week, lucky enough, we have plenty of news that's not Corona-related, so we're going to give everyone a little bit of a break, though, of course, we're still going to touch it a little bit because it's related to a few of the issues, but it's not at least the main story of the week. For us at Electrek, which I think was kind of a relief talking about it all the time. It kind of driving us crazy. But yeah, the first thing is Tesla's delivery number for the first quarter, which of course is a little bit related to Corona since Tesla had to stop production at the Fremont factory. But pretty good.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe more than pretty good because technically it is the best first quarter ever that Tesla had. I mean, regardless of Corona, there's always a dip in the auto industry for the first quarter of the year. Just some seasonal stuff. People don't buy cars as much in the winter. But, I mean, what we were hearing from Tesla staff, it was that Tesla was aiming for a delivery goal similar to the last quarter, which was, of course, 112,000 deliveries. Yeah, 112,000 deliveries. So they are a lot short of that. But if you look at the actual numbers, at 88,400 deliveries, if they had a normal end-of-the-quarter push for the last 2 to 3 weeks, they would have gotten pretty close to that, in my opinion. We're talking about 76,200 Model 3 and Y and 12,200 Model S and X. Now, unfortunately, Tesla is not breaking down those Model 3 and Y deliveries, which is kind of annoying. I mean, it's the first quarter that Tesla started deliveries of the Model Y. We kind of want to know how many Model Ys they deliver.
Yeah, that is an interesting way to put it out there.
Mm-hmm. Do you have an estimate, you think, on the 76,000, you think?
Maybe, I don't know, 15,000 Model Ys?
That much? Oh, really? I don't know. Okay, I was closer to like maybe 4,000 to 5,000, in my opinion.
Yeah, that's true. They just started getting out at the end of the quarter.
Production was 102,672, which is very good because that's actually pretty close to Tesla's last record, which was last quarter at 105,000 units. And so really less than 3,000 shorts here, so pretty close. They would have definitely beat that if they had the last week of production at Fremont factory. But what compensated for that is obviously the Shanghai factory that has been producing all throughout the quarter, except for a few weeks, again, due to the coronavirus and to Chinese New Year's. I'm not sure how the Chinese New Year's and the shutdown overlapped in China, but I don't think Tesla was down more than 2 weeks in China. Of course, the production volume might probably get affected during the weeks preceding the shutdown, but still, Tesla is apparently now producing 3,000 cars a week in Shanghai, which is a bomb to Tesla's production right now since Fremont is down. If you can imagine, if Tesla didn't get Shanghai running before the coronavirus, that would have been a real problem for Tesla. So at least there's some revenue coming in. Tesla can sell a few cars in China. And they're going to have a decent inventory now in the US and in Europe to a certain degree. Maybe not that much, but we see 102,000 cars produced, 88,000 cars delivered. So that's 14,000 cars that a surplus of 14,000 cars
added
for Tesla.
To inventory. I was just going to say that. Quite a bit, especially with questionable months ahead in terms of people buying.
Yeah, but they are not producing anything out of Fremont, so at least they can try to sell that where they can, where they don't have the restriction on sales and deliveries that much. They can try to move the cars around a little bit and see where they can sell those. So it's not, at least they get some revenue from that, and Tesla is not completely stuck.
Do you think they overproduced in anticipation of a long outage?
I think they produce everything they can all the time, really. And then they try to sell that. Like it's up to the sales teams to really come up. Hence the perpetual end of quarter push that Tesla keeps having every quarter. And even though it It's not supposed to be the case. But yeah, so now, I mean, Tesla definitely came out okay of Q1. I'm not saying that they're going to make money. I'm not saying that. But I think if they lose money, shouldn't be that bad. I think for sure that the cash balance is going to be up in Q1. That there's no doubt, especially since they raised a ton of money. So I think Q1, Tesla is safe. Now it's really like looking into Q2. Like, since how long is Fremont going to be down during Q2? There's not going to be production. How many cars they can sell in a slow market because of the recession we are obviously going into due to the triggered by the virus and the pandemic. So I don't know. It's up in the air. It's pretty much useless, right? To do a prediction.
Yeah, it's hard. We know that Tesla is going to be producing ventilators for the U.S. government and for the states at Fremont and also at the other factory, the one in New York. I don't know about Gigafactory, if they've said anything there, but would Tesla be able to knock out any cars alongside the ventilators if, you know, they're open because they're making ventilators, but hey, you know, we're going to throw out a couple cars too while we're here. Is that something that they would do? They could do.
That would surprise me, but I wouldn't get it past Tesla. They are pretty creative sometimes. I don't know about that. I have my doubts. I think more that it's going to be about trying to reopen Fremont as soon as possible, and Gigafactory too, because of course Gigafactory supplies Fremont. It's going to be the next month is going to tell us. April, really, the month of April is going to tell us what's going to happen throughout the quarter. If Tesla can open by the end of the month, then they shouldn't be too down. But they of course, they're going to be down. Like right now, I think a good Q2 for Tesla would probably be 50,000 cars delivered. That would be good, I think. That's assuming they can reopen by the end of by the beginning of May. But again, that's. There's too many variables that can change that, so it's a very weak prediction. All right, moving on from the Q1 numbers. On the software side, because I mean, Tesla's Fremont factory is shut down, but the engineers are still working from home, and we expect some software update to come out still in the next few months. The main one is the full self-driving. Well. It's a full self-driving feature. It's not. This is going to be so hard to talk about with the, because now that Tesla is actually releasing features under the full self-driving package, so it makes it sound like it could be full self-driving, but it's not full self-driving. Of course, that's the name of the package. It just gradually has features that could lead to full self-driving at one point. So let's keep that in mind as we talk about those features. So the main one really is like Tesla is trying to close the gap between Autopilot, which is mainly for highway driving. Then you have the new like smart summon thing that handles those speed situation in parking lots and things like that. So you want the in middle, which is like the city driving, which mainly requires Tesla's system to handle intersection, really. So that's traffic lights, that's stop signs. So last year we were supposed to see that. But instead, Elon said that it was going to be like a preview thing, preview of full self-driving. And that ended up to be the visualization of the stop sign and the traffic light that was released late in December. Tesla's vehicles were never acting on those visualization. Like, they could see the traffic lights, but they wouldn't act on them. So last week, just before the podcast, we saw that in the early access program, there's an update now that enables Tesla Autopilot to act on those intersection to navigate them. There was a quick video that was released by Aldous Speck. Did we do that? Yeah, we did. We did talk about it last week. Yeah,
I think so.
We went through the video here, but the video doesn't tell us exactly what's happening, although that seems to be acting on it. What happened this week is that we got access to the release note for the update for the LXS program, thanks to Green, Tesla hacker Green. And it explains how the system works. which we learned that it's partly relies on GPS. So it's not just a vision system. And eventually Tesla wants it to be only vision based, just like current driving system, which are powered by humans. And we are vision based, of course. But now they still have GPS data using to find the intersection and traffic lights, which is somewhat questionable. But also, it seems like there's some limitation that the drivers needs to confirm. If we look here, I'm quoting: "When stopping at traffic light and stop sign is enabled." That's actually the name of the feature. Stopping at traffic light and stop sign, that's the name of the feature. So that's why they say that when you enable that feature, and you are using auto steer and traffic aware cruise control, the touchscreen displays a pop-up message to inform you that an upcoming traffic line stop sign on road marking has been detected. As it approaches the stop location, even at an intersection in which the traffic light is green, the Model 3 Model Y slows down and displays a red line to indicate where the vehicle will come to a complete stop. So that's the line that we saw in the previous video, the red line. To continue to the intersection, again, even if the traffic light is already green, you must press down on the gear level or briefly press the accelerator pedal to give the vehicle permission to proceed. When you've confirmed that you want to proceed, the red stop line turns gray and Model 3 Model Y continue to the intersection and resume your set cruising speed. So they do require permission, and that's really reminiscent of when Tesla started introducing the automatic lane change,
right?
With Navigate on Autopilot. So the car would suggest you a lane change, and you would have to confirm before doing it. Eventually, they allow you to remove that requirement. So you can still use with the requirement, but you can disable that, and the system will do it itself. So I think something similar is going to happen here, where right now you have to confirm that, yeah, I see the light is green. I want to go through it. I'm just hoping that there's no any false positive there. That could be a little bit dangerous. But of course, like any other autopilot feature, it requires you to always be paying attention and be ready to take control at all times. So keep that in mind. And especially keep that in mind while watching this, getting this list of limitations here that Tesla is mentioning. So they say that they can handle intersection unless there's a railroad crossing, keep out zone, toll booths, crosswalk system, yield sign or temporary traffic light and stop signs, miscellaneous traffic U-turn lights, bicycle and pedestrian crossing lights, lane availability lights. Those are a lot of limitations. I mean, especially the crosswalk system, that's pretty common at intersections. So keep that in mind when you use the new stopping at traffic light and stop signs features. And that's quite a mouthful for the name of a feature. But yeah, it's exciting that Tesla is moving forward with that. But be extremely careful when using the features, because we see a ton of limitation on it. You can check out the release note on Electrek on an article. They give you a bunch of scenarios of how the car is going to react to different light patterns and intersection type of intersection. It's a very useful feature, I think, to read before using the features. Of course, once Tesla start releasing it to the broader fleet and not just the early access program, everyone's going to get that set of release notes anyway. But if you want to get ahead of it and check it now, we have it up on the Electrek. There's some Tesla Model Y news. So it's been a few weeks now that the car has been on the road. People have been testing it. And drag times, an interesting test that they did where they have a Tesla Model Y performance and they were testing it against the Model 3 performance. And they were surprised by the quarter mile time and speed that the Model Y performance was getting over the Model 3. It was like too close to make sense with the same powertrain, but a relatively bigger car, presumably heavier, though we haven't seen the weight of the car yet. I'm curious, I should research that. I'm sure it's been out. Someone has weighted it by that point, but I'd be curious to see the weight difference. Anyway, it didn't add up to him. So what he did, he installed a system. I haven't seen that before. It was pretty interesting. He managed to get an OBD link out of the car through the behind the front, the driver's seat, you can split an OBD link there and get access to the data directly from Tesla's system. You just need a thing on Amazon here. I can show you what it looks like. This thing, a Bluetooth OBD link. And then you cannot see it from that because it opens up. And you need an app that can read that. But it's interesting stuff. So he did that with both the Model 3 and the Model Y. And here are the results here. Front motor of the Model 3, 180 kilowatts. 198 for the Model Y's front motor. Rear motor, 255 kilowatts for the Model 3. 270.5 for the Model Y. So total output difference, 435.5 for the Model 3, 469 for the Model Y. So
significant.
Significant for sure. And you can look at the graph here. You can see how each motor output. So the Model 3 gets to the highest performance quicker, but the Model Y definitely sustain higher performance for longer. All right. So that's all that we know for sure now. So now the question is, How is that happening? Because the Model 3 and Model Y are supposed to have the same powertrain. So either they have different powertrains or they are tuned differently. I don't think they have different powertrains because that would completely scrap the whole idea that they share 75%+ of their parts. Like that fact is all based around the powertrain, and which of course includes so many parts. Then the body is different and there's a few other parts that's different, but the core of the car, the technology is supposed to be very similar here. So using the same motor, using the same batteries. So that, I don't think it's different. So that would mean that Tesla is enabling more performance of the Model Y and possibly then throttling the performance of the Model 3 performance. Too many performance here. But I think you get what I mean. Do you think that's possible, Seth?
I mean, it's absolutely possible, but like I was kind of under the assumption or the impression that they were pretty much putting all the power they could in the performance version, right, of the Model 3.
Yeah.
The idea was like, hey, we're going to put all the performance we possibly can through this thing. And to find out that there's another, 40 horsepower, 40 kilowatt?
40 plus, yeah.
Available. That's kind of nuts. And it kind of makes me think, you know, maybe they can up the power in the Model 3 a little bit, or at least there's some headway there.
That would make a big difference. 40 kilowatts more in the Model 3 performance?
Yeah, that would fly.
Yeah.
So it's a good question. I don't know. I mean, maybe the motors are slightly different. I don't know.
I mean, you know how Tesla is. Like, they like to push out the new product, and then they update their other lineup to catch up to it later, or like boost the sales again. So I think Tesla might be looking at making the Model Y look better right now.
Right. Or
so look no, it's not as fast as the Model 3 still, to be clear, but it's pretty close,
right.
which again doesn't make sense due to the fun factor. So my idea here is maybe Tesla is looking, all right, let's make the Model Y performance look better now, because like it's a harder sell than the Model 3 performance to like crossovers. People don't necessarily go with the more performance version. The sedan is more makes more sense. So they make the Model Y performance look better now, and then maybe in a few months they unlock the Model 3 performance once they get through Model Y. The demands just stabilize. With more car on the road, more to mouth, of course, coronavirus aside, that probably like change their plans, of course. But then you can boost the Model 3. But yeah, I mean, was it less than a year ago that Tesla unlocked the 5% more in the Model 3 performance? So they already did that. Like if that's that's a little bit more than 5% again. So like that's starting to add up here.
Yeah, definitely. And you know, we know that Tesla makes incremental improvements to everything all the time, not just at, you know, new model years or new whatever. So it's possible that, you know, over the year since the Model 3 performance, or a couple years now, came out, the motors might have been improved. They can take more energy. They just haven't upgraded the whole fleet because maybe the first ones aren't as good as the ones that are coming off the line right now. They don't want to differentiate. I don't know.
Yeah, that's a good point because I think drag times, Model 3 performance is more than a year old. So that could make sense. You're right. Staying on the Model Y, we had the first Model Y teardown already. Sandy Monroe, which you might remember as he's become quite popular in the Tesla community over the last 2 years with the Model 3. At first, he wasn't a fan at all for some reason. He kind of thrashed the Model 3 based on his first teardown and then completely changed his tune within a year and basically became a fanboy and loved Tesla. And now he's doing the Model Y teardown, and he's going all out for it, where he's doing this page where he gradually releases pieces by pieces the teardown. So yesterday we reported on the fit and finish. So Sandy Monroe is big on panel gaps. So he went through all the panel gaps on the Model Y. He was very satisfied with the front end, with the sides. Wasn't as satisfied with the back end of the vehicle. The trunk wasn't up to a standard. But to be honest, like, he was talking about a millimeter here, a millimeter there. And he even admitted that for most people, they wouldn't care about that at all. It's really for people like him that's an issue. The frunk had some bigger issues, though. The frunk they had a broken trim where the clip on it wasn't sticking out. But that happens a lot, to be honest. Like he was like surprised that he could remove the trim easy. But I've seen that on plenty of Tesla cars, and it's normally it's just not put in correctly, and you can just push a bit on it, and then the clips will go in. However, there was one clip that was already broken on it, which is not good, but to be honest, it doesn't change anything. Like, there's like 12 clips on that trim, so if one is broken, it still stays in place pretty good. But yeah, I admitted that there was he said that was a quality assessment issue. He went into it. He did another video about it where he gives some suggestions to Tesla to improve it. He went through the suspension. Said the Model Y suspension at the front is a little bit beefier than the Model 3 suspension. So there's that, especially when it comes to the control arms, lower control arms. But then he went to the rear suspension, and it's exactly the same as the Model 3. It's even had a Model 3 sticker on the suspension, so it was exactly they produce the same for Model 3 and Model Y on the rear. So that's where the part sharings happened. So that was for yesterday, but then he added one that we posted today. That is wiring, body casting, and a few other things. And this one is a little bit more interesting because that touches what Elon has been boasting about, some improvement to the Model Y, including the wiring, which is supposed to be a lot more efficient, and also the casting, especially for the rear of the car, is supposed to be almost one piece of equipment, one giant piece of aluminum casting instead of a bunch of parts. And that's one of the things that Monroe was hammering Tesla on early on with the Model 3. When he was looking at the back of the car, he wasn't impressed at all. He said it was like 100 different parts that didn't make sense to him. Tesla definitely addressed that. So he actually saw it in person by doing the breakdown. And first, for the wiring, he was very impressed by it. All the 12-volt wiring around the car has some sort of a rugged wrapping around it. And he says that would completely eliminate any kind of shortage, short circuiting over time, but by the wiring degrading over time. So that's a plus. He said that no one does that. He was surprised because it was like no other automakers goes that far in protecting the wiring in the car. So kudos to Tesla on that. He also liked these things here, which are called quick connects, and they are for the AC system. And he was also impressive about it because apparently not a lot of people use those because they are a lot more expensive. But he says it's almost completely eliminates risk of leakage down the road. So another good thing. The brakes, you said they were very similar to the Model 3 brakes, but a little bit bigger. And they're still, though, repackaged Brembo brakes, basically. So, of course, Brembo is a good...
Yeah, Brembo's top-notch.
Yeah. Now, going to the rear of the car, here what we see is basically the trunk of the vehicle with the cover removed. So the trunk itself is now one piece, which he believes it's nylon. It's a glass-filled nylon, which I'm not sure what kind of material is that, but Tesla basically casted the whole trunk like that and drops it into the body of the car. So Monroe was impressed because he says it's much more efficient than the Model 3 system. And then around the whole thing, that's the actual body of the car, which he says is one gigantic aluminum casting piece. And that's really the biggest improvement because Tesla is doing it just in one giant piece instead of like what he said last time was 100 of different ones. I would suggest that if you are interested in the Model Y, I would watch Monroe's videos on it. Very interesting stuff. Even starting to make me think that I should upgrade my Model 3 from Model Y because the improvements are significant.
Yeah, I'm getting excited about this Model Y now.
Yeah.
Especially now I'm contemplating upgrading to the performance version. I mean, I don't know when mine's coming, but it's really tempting because I never thought I was going to be anywhere near the Model 3. I will say Mick mentioned from our previous story, perhaps one of the reasons they're waiting to increase the performance in the Model 3 performance is that they're still waiting for the Model S Plaid to come out and they don't want to kind of jump over.
Good point.
You know, they don't want prospective Model S buyers to jump in on the Model 3. Maybe. I mean, that's just something to think about. How do you think, we were expecting mid-year Model S and X upgrades, or at least Model S. How do you think the pandemic's going to affect that, or will it affect it?
That's a very good question. I was reporting a few weeks ago that Tesla was planning to use a shutdown to upgrade their production lines and everything. So that could actually be an opportunity for Tesla to upgrade the Model S and X line, or at least the Model S, because the Model S Plaid is supposed to come before the Model X. So it might be an opportunity to do that now, introduce the vehicle during the summer as planned, or even sooner, really. But at the same time, now I'm starting to hear, I haven't confirmed that yet, but I'm starting to hear from Tesla that they are now very worried about the situation in long-term in terms of the demand, well, not necessarily long-term, but mid-term, if the crisis plunged the economy into a deep recession and they could tighten the belt and focus just on more high-volume vehicles that are going to be easier to sell. So I don't know. At the same time, Tesla's never had any issues selling high-performance cars, so maybe the Plaid Model S makes sense too. I don't know. I really don't know.
Yeah, and they do have
one thing.
They do have some inventory of the current version. So if they wanted
that too,
if they wanted to kind of spend some time switching the assembly lines, they could kind of rely on their current inventory for short term, medium term sales.
And try to sell all of that before. Yeah, that's a good opportunity, really, because there's always issues with Tesla releasing a new version of its cars and people like complaining that they just bought the old one and whatever. But so if Tesla just focuses right now on like selling all its inventory, update the line, and like there's nothing to sell, like no one can complain at that point. Even if they bought an inventory car, like they did it knowing that there wouldn't be any new car coming out for a while. But yeah, one thing I'm sure that's not going to come out anytime soon, though, is the new Roadster. Tesla is not going to start production anytime soon because, I mean, the first, like the the first 100 the roadsters are they have to give out, but not for free again, like we keep saying for free, but they already are paid for through referrals from years ago, so that's going to be a big expense for them that they are not going to do right now for sure. But we already, even though officially it's supposed to come in 2020, Elon already pointed to the fact that, hinted to the fact that maybe it won't be because it's not a priority. And it makes sense, especially with the Model Y now coming out, and I'm sure the Cybertruck is going to be a bigger priority.
Yeah.
But the Cybertruck is going to be a giant capital expenditure to do, though, because they have to build a brand new factory for it, while the Roadster are going to be lower volume vehicles. Though I'm sure Tesla still wants to make a couple, maybe a couple thousand a year. Yeah, I could see Tesla making like 2,000 Roadsters a year.
Yeah, I mean, those might be high margin cars. I've always been kind of a, I mean, of course, I would love to have a fully decked out Founder Series Roadster, but I'm kind of the opinion that they really should make a Miata-ish version of the Roadster with like a normal size battery pack, maybe a, you know, 60-70 kilowatt hour battery pack, and a, you know, 200, you know, kilowatt, and sell it for, I mean, obviously it would cannibalize sales of the fast ones, but like, you know, maybe it only goes 150 miles per hour, you know, like still be pretty fun.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Yeah, it's gonna be a lot lighter too. Right.
Yeah, it'd probably handle a lot better. So
yeah, you could make a 60 kilowatt hour Roadster that go probably 250 easy.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would be crazy. I'm just not sure, like, this form factor, like, how expensive it is. Also, you have to do, like, different tires, different wheels for it.
Right.
You don't want necessarily the performance wheel. So you have to make them, you make the car still look good, but we have having more efficient wheels. So I don't know. It's a complicated issue, but I know what you're saying. But I think maybe the Roadster itself might not be the platform for it.
Yeah.
For that Miata electric that we've been drooling over for a long time. Electrica Mechanica in Canada is trying to do it. It's trying to do like a single, like not too expensive, two seater convertible. And those are the maker, the solo, the three wheels, the three wheeler solo, if you guys remember. All right, let's move on to an update that Tesla started pushing out last night. It's the dash cam viewer. So for the people that use Tesla Cam in Sentry mode, you can now, well, if you have the new update, which is, where is the 2020.12.5. So with that new update, you get this dash cam viewer and you can view all your videos from Sentry mode and Tesla Cam directly on the center screen of the car. So you don't have to remove your storage device and plug it into whatever other device, a laptop, a phone, or a tablet, and watch the videos, and you can watch them with all the different views available.
That's really cool. I can't wait to watch it. The funny thing to me, though, is that a lot of people are saying, oh, Tesla listened to our suggestions. No, that of course this was always going to be part of the thing. They just had to build it. Like they came up with the Sentry, or you know, the Tesla Cam, the Sentry mode, which I always like to take credit for because Elon asked that one time, and I said make the cameras security. But I'm sure they had their own separate way of thinking about it. But like, of course, this is going to be part of it. It just like it's not easy to build video software like for a car. Like that has new cameras, so that takes some time. But it's just to me, it's funny that like all the super fans are like Tesla, listen to us. We said we want to view it, and like of course that you're going to do that. And of course, like every Tesla employee that's got a Tesla is like, why can't I watch this on my car? I don't want to have to export it to my computer or my phone.
Yeah, it's just way down on the priority list, exactly. And now they got to it and. Maybe they got to it because of the corona.
It's
like, like a lot of maybe a lot of Tesla's programs are on hold right now. So the software engineers they go down the list of features, and maybe we're gonna get a lot of those smaller features over the next few weeks because of that. That could be kind of fun. All right, let's go into some Tesla energy stuff because we had a lot this week. We reported on this massive new Tesla solar roof installation in Florida. So a few theories thinking about this installation. One, Tesla made it made the whole roof hurricane proof, which is important because roofs in Florida apparently have to be hurricane proof now. So all the different fittings and everything and the tiles have to withstand a certain amount of wind. And the first installation in Florida completed with that standard has been done. So now we expect more installation in Florida going forward. But this one was also interesting because it was a giant one. It's the biggest solar roof installation that I know of at this time. So I called it the biggest. But there might be some other ones that are around the same size or even bigger. Let us know if you know about them. But for everything that's been reported so far, I think this one is the biggest. 18 kilowatts. So that's a big installation. And really, it puts into perspective what happened like a few weeks ago when Tesla announced the capacity to produce 1,000 roof per week, 1,000 solar roof per week. And they made that claims based on 4 megawatts of production, which would put the average Tesla solar roof at 4 kilowatts. And we said that was crazy low, that we don't even know of a solar roof installation at 4 kilowatts. And now we have one at 18. So you can imagine that Tesla was stretching the numbers here when they said 1,000 roof per week. But yeah, this new installation is pretty impressive. There was a lot of fittings, again, that that Tesla had to go around and make sure that works, especially with the hurricane proof stuff. They add this, it comes with 4 power walls too, so it's a big installation, not only for energy generation at 18 kilowatts, but also energy storage at, so 4 power walls, 54 kilowatt hour of energy capacity. So it enables them to completely use the solar power even at night. So we see some of the accessories they use here. You have the backup gateway, new electrical panel. And right here you have 3 inverters. 1, 2, 3.
And are those?
So what the question?
Are those Tesla? Yep. Tesla inverters?
They are non-branded inverters. So I don't know if they are Teslas or just they remove the branding somehow, but they're not branded.
They don't look like SolarEdge.
They don't.
Yeah,
there are Tesla often uses SolarEdge, especially for their solar panel installation. But I don't know about a solar roof here, especially for such a big installation. Here's the first picture of the solar gateway. So not to be confused with a backup gateway, that's for the using the power wall as backup power. Solar gateway, it's this new little device that's like a router basically for your solar system, and it's the brain of the installation that enables the Tesla app to connect to the entire system. So the big question on everyone's mind is how much this whole thing costs, an 18 kilowatt solar roof system. $100,000 before incentives.
Yikes.
Well, that sounds a lot, like a lot, because it is a lot. But first of all, before incentives, so you remove 26% of that right away for the federal because of the federal tax credit, so there's a big difference right there. So $74,000 for removing a roof, having a brand new roof, and 4 power walls. You have to keep in mind 4 power walls, that's a lot too. So they're basically not ever going to have to pay electricity going forward. Also, it adds the value of the house, you would assume. So yeah, there's some, it's not a bad deal in my opinion, really. It's an 18 kilowatt system. How big is your system set?
12.9.
And how much did it cost?
So the same thing. It was about $50,000. But at the time it was 30% federal. So
yeah.
That's down to $35,000. And then NYSERDA, which is New York's thing, did like a dollar per kilowatt, dollar per watt, something weird like that. So it ended up being half incentivized, so it was a little under $25,000 bucks.
Okay, but let's compare before incentive for each $50,000. But that's not that's without four power walls. That's also 6 kilowatt less output.
Right.
And also, it's not a roof.
Right.
It's solar panels on top of the roof. So, you can see that there's value here. Like, it's not a bad value at all. If you break down the cost of the actual roof itself without all the rest, the normal tiles were almost $24,000, and the solar tiles were almost $48,000. So that's a lot. It comes down to a cost of $7 per square foot or $2.65 per watt.
Now, what have you heard? So my understanding is that the solar roof tiles aren't as efficient as a panel per square foot. What have you heard about, like, Tesla solar roof tiles getting the rated amount of kilowatts or watts or whatever? My understanding is that they're not getting quite as much as you would expect, you know, per rating. Like, so if you had perfect sun on a perfect day, you know, you wouldn't be able to get exactly as much as Tesla says you can get. Have you heard the same thing?
Yes, apparently so. It's not, I don't have actual numbers on it, but everybody's saying that it's the solar cell, even though it's a good solar cell, it's not as efficient as if it wasn't a panel versus the tile. However, they can optimize the roof by, since all the solar cells are smaller inside the tiles, you can optimize the roof in a way that you get more sun out of it throughout the day. Mm. Than having like a large like 3x2 solar panel that you cannot put as many. You can put a lot too, but like you're restricted by the size of the roof to a certain degrees, and the roof are not like perfect square like solar panels are. So with the tiles, you can actually go further out some places and completely cover the surface where you get most sun. So that could be an advantage to a degree. But, I mean, that house is not that big. It's a big house. It's 3,000 square feet, I think, he said. 3,000 square feet. And
it's one story.
You got 18 kilowatts on 3,000 square feet. That's pretty good, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Because even if it's less efficient, 18 kilowatts is still 18 kilowatts. Like, it's just less efficient per space. So,
I guess there's more glass between the panel and the, you know, the outside world in a roof than a panel.
Mm-hmm.
So that
that's a good point.
That might have something to do with the efficiency and the, you know, the amount of time during the day where you're getting the best power.
Yep. So this installation was done in Orlando, Florida, and it's all the information is thanks to, I'm sorry, I'm going to mess up his name, but Devaloy. I think. Is that how you pronounce that?
No idea. It looks like Devaloy.
Yeah. Devaloy and Darylene, I think. Darylene? Lane? They sent us all the information, so I appreciate it. And they also gave us the first look at the Tesla Solar Glass Roof Owner's Manual. So we posted that on Electrek, so you can check it out. I think it's the first time that it was released. Not that much new information in it, but some beautiful renders of the solar roof. Look at the app and the details of it. Look at the solar gateway. This is a little router. All the different accessories. So like this one you see, said that's an actual solar hedge here, the inverter. So Tesla apparently does use it for the solar roof, but maybe not for that big installation there. There's a main panel, the gateway, utility meter, power wall. So yeah, we posted the whole thing on Electrek if you want to go check it out and see for yourself. That's something that we reported last weekend. So that was after the last week's podcast. We didn't talk about it, but very cool project in Hawaii. 244 megapacks project that Tesla is bidding on the island of Oahu in Kahe Valley. So it's a 110 megawatt hour project that Tesla is bidding on. Looks like they are the leader on the bid right now, on the request for proposals. And Tesla's proposal include 244 megapacks to be deployed on the island to provide load shifting services, so reduce the peak output, the peak demand, I mean, and a contingency, of course, to provide some backup power instead to the system. Very interesting project, estimated at $200 to $300 million, so it would be a big project for Tesla. You were complaining, Seth, when you saw the project that it was on the beachfront.
Yeah, it seems nice. Seems like a nice area. Yeah. Maybe they can build some like condos on top of the batteries.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, it's not like Tesla's fault. It, like, there's already a power station there. But yeah, it's kind of weird to put a power station right on the Sienna if it's like it's not a tidal power station or anything like that. It's not not related to the ocean at all.
I guess you have a lot of coastline in Hawaii, so
yeah, you do. And also the roads are all around the coastline, so you don't go inland that much, and you need access to it. But yeah, very interesting project. We're gonna keep an eye on it. If Tesla do gets it, it's gonna be a big deal. So still on Tesla Energy News, we got the price of the power pack here, and it's not cheap. $172,000 for a power pack and its inverter. So we heard about the price of the power pack before, like years ago, really, when Tesla first started to market to smaller commercial installations. But they killed that configurator for a while. They brought it back now as part of Tesla's commercial solar system. So when Tesla launched the subscription system for residential solar, they also, a few months later, launched a subscription for commercial solar. So you can have no cost subscription, no upfront cost for a large commercial installation between 40 kilowatts and 240 kilowatts. And when you do no upfront cost, you just pay a monthly fee. But the configurator also includes buying, if you buy the whole solar installation. And now if you buy, you get the option to add a power pack. So for a 40 kilowatt solar system, Tesla recommend one power pack, and that comes out at $172,000. That's kind of crazy, but there's some rationale behind it that do make sense. First of all, it does come with the inverters. So a commercial inverter it's not cheap. It's expensive. Then we're not talking about a 100 kilowatt hour power pack now, not a 200 kilowatt hour power pack. The power pack now is apparently at 232 kilowatt hour. So it did increase in capacity a lot over the years. So that makes a little bit more sense now, but it still adds up to $744 per kilowatt hour before incentive. Because again, you do get the incentive if you're, you do get the incentive on power walls too, if it's combined with the solar system. So that to keep in mind. Now, if you add more volume, and of course more volume, and the inverter comes with it, and so that brings the price down because you don't have one inverter per pack. You can combine it with several packs. So if you do the 240 kilowatt system, you get four power packs, and it comes down to $127,000 per power pack, so $550 per kilowatt hour. So yeah, that's starting to make a lot more sense. Here you have the suggestion for Tesla Solar and everything.
It's interesting you can buy this all online. Like, I don't know, like, what a credit card.
With a $100 deposit.
Right. I don't know.
They take a credit card and everything. Yeah, it's a big project. But, of course, Tesla is banking on their brand name. But I don't know how big they are in the commercial solar business nowadays. And I need to look into that because SolarCity was big at one point in the solar commercial market. And, of course, Tesla cut a lot of those projects and stopped doing them.
Well, they had that year where they kind of had to go back and fix all the there was like a bad part. Not Tesla's fault, but they had a bad part, and like all the Walmarts were causing fires. So they basically like lost a year installations because they had to send people back and like replace all those.
And lost a lot of the reputation too.
Right. But this is a nice solution. Like, I know, like, my wife's company is considering a solar solution. They have diesel generators now that come on in the summer when the brownouts come. And I'm like, that's crazy. You just should go get solar, and, you know, the CFO is just like, you know, how did we even start this? And now you just throw them at the website and you configure it based on what your needs are, and it's done.
Yeah, because it's not crazy. If you look, let me look here real quick. Just a basic system, commercial, like the 40 kilowatt one, after, because they do have price both for incentive if you buy, but also the subscription is really, it's not unreasonable at all. Okay, so the 40 kilowatt, okay, without... okay, that's, am I buying? No, I don't want to buy. I want to...
Don't accidentally set yourself up with one of those.
No, I just don't see the option to subscription service. That's weird. Did they remove that? Anyway, let's go just buying instead. If you buy the system, it's 40 kilowatts, $88,000. But after incentive, it comes down to $65,000. A 40 kilowatt system, there's a lot of businesses that's going to be enough for them to power the entire business. 120 kilowatt, $142,000 after incentive. Not bad.
Yeah.
All right. Trump set to gut mileage standards and attack on electric cars. So amid the whole Corona crisis thing, they are moving forward with the removal of the CAFE standard from the Obama era. And of course, it's something that we knew was coming for a while now, but there's a lot of legal battles around it. But the EPA announced this week that they are moving forward with it. Boy.
It's disappointing, like, times two. Like, it's disappointing that they're doing it, but it's really disappointing that they're using a pandemic national emergency where everybody's suffering to like justify they're turning the screws on this.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, what Trump and Wheeler said this week was just crazy. Like, oh, it's going to make people safer. It's going to reduce pollution and everything. Like, how stupid do you think we are? Like, reducing emission standard, make them the laxer and everything, that's going to reduce pollution now? Like, what the hell? It makes no sense. Yeah,
if you want to get down dirty with it, my understanding, and we've kind of written about this a few times, is that the more pollution you have in the air, the more susceptible the population is to the coronavirus and getting sick. So, like, they don't have a leg to stand on, really, in this.
No, of course not. I mean, the whole coronavirus is all respiratory issues. So if you have already a problem with your lungs, you're much more subject to being in danger from it. So, of course, cleaner air makes a big difference. But anyway, the real problem with that is that they have zero long-term vision at all. Because we know, of course, that electric, because we're like China, that you go find, we know where the market is going here. And what they're doing by allowing the automakers to not have to produce electric vehicles in volume right now, they gave the option to them. And unfortunately, automakers often will take the easiest option. And if they do that, they're going to fall behind on electric vehicles. And then the U.S. is going to fall behind on electric vehicles. And it's not going to just be a problem for pollution, but it's also going to be an economical problem where... The U.S. automakers won't be the leaders in electric vehicles, and therefore they will lose in value and maybe even go bankrupt. I mean, the automakers went bankrupt in 2008, 2009 in the U.S. Double down with the fact that there's a big transition in the industry now to electric vehicles, and this coronavirus happens. I think we're going to see some giant falls.
Yeah.
Some giant will fall. I think GM's going to be the first.
I don't know. I mean, FCA seems way more likely.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah.
But GM and Ford both seem like they're not going to be keeping up. And we saw that leak Reuters report. They really don't have the real intentions of ramping up EVs seriously by the middle of the decade. Even though they're giving us all the good PR they can possibly give us, it really seems like EVs are going to be a very small part of their portfolio for the next 4 years, 5 years at least. I believe Reuters had a leaked document from Ford or GM or both saying that, you know, like they don't anticipate making the same amount of EVs in 2025 that Tesla made last year. So that kind of just shows you like they're.
Yeah. Depends to have like 20 different EVs, but make 20 units of each. Right. Like that's basically it. It's disappointing. I mean, I still have some hope to a degree where they just lack vision. But the engineers that are working on this project are legit though. Like I'm not blaming like any GM engineer or any Ford engineer like that. Like if those engineers are tasked with making an electric truck or something like that, like the electric F-150, they're gonna do everything they can to make the best truck they can. And even if Ford as a company is not planning to have like make hundreds of thousands of them a year, if the car that they deliver, the truck they deliver is good, that works for any vehicle programs or any other automakers too. If they do deliver a great car and then it starts selling, then they're going to change their mind and invest in higher volume production. So I still have that hope, but of course that would put them years behind Teslas and all of the automakers that are really investing in volume production, like Volkswagen and those companies. But yeah, something looking good. Speaking of laggers, Toyota. Toyota officially launched this week their electric car company with BYD. It's called BYD Toyota EV Technology. So I don't think they're going to sell cars under that company, but they're going to develop fully electric cars underneath it. So it's 300 people. They took 300 engineers from each company, combined. And the goal is to design, develop battery electric vehicles and their platform and related parts. And you guessed it, it's for the Chinese market. So Toyota also had some big announcement in the last few years about EVs, even though they still haven't produced anything else outside of China. Toyota still sees EVs as compliance vehicle, and they're only going to make them where they have to make them. And that's China for now. And of course, in Europe, they're banking more on plug-ins, on hybrids. But they're going to have to do a few electric cars there too. In the U.S., don't hold your breath to buy a Toyota electric car. And nor should you even want to, since they have backed Trump on the EPA standards and everything. It's not.
Yeah, and they have anti-EV advertising. And
oh, that too. That's awful. Yeah. Yeah. They're self-charging EVs. Oh, boy.
Yeah.
All right, let's move on. Let's go to the questions.
All right. So a lot of people, I think this was also last week, but a lot of people are concerned about the Investor Battery Day, seeing as we're in the middle of a pandemic. And I would imagine that Tesla will just do some sort of live stream. You know, I don't even know how they're going to do that, to be honest. Like, I know you're not supposed to be within 6 feet, and this is going to be in New York, where the pandemic is probably the strongest in the world right now. So it will be.
I mean, it doesn't really have to be New York, though. Like, you could just like do like a PowerPoint type presentation and have Elon talk on it and everything.
Yeah,
but that's not Tesla style, though. So they might push it, I think.
Yeah,
not only they might push it for that, but also, what I believe is coming, like we know that it's going to be about the Roadrunner project, the battery, new battery cell that Tesla is going to produce themselves. But I think that announcement is not going to just be about the underlying technology, but it's going to be an announcement of like, we are bringing this to production in extreme volume, and we're going to have these big factories for it and everything. And that's going to be like a multi-billion-dollar project. Might not be the best time to do that, to announce a multi-billion-dollar project.
Right. All that stuff could be on hold or So that couple of people asked about that. Do you think Tesla will prioritize shipping cars to the closest customers this next quarter, assuming they get production back up with everything going on? That's from Christian Vieira.
Well, yeah, I mean, if they do get the factory back and running in Q2, they're going to want to deliver those cars in Q2 as soon as possible, because for sure Q2 is going to be way down already with a week now of downtime in Fremont. Like, yeah, that would make sense. But also they're gonna ship the cars where there's demand for it. That's what they're going to do.
They're going to do whatever they
can
do. Yeah. Choppa Boy asks, has anyone else heard that there are Model Y available for immediate delivery if we are willing to change options to match it? That sounds reasonable to me. I would assume that that's going to start happening, especially with a lot of people probably canceling their orders.
Yeah. But it's not going to happen in volume a lot. Like, Tesla is not producing any more Model Y right now. So if there's some, like you said, it's some cancellation. So if there's 100 of them, I'd be surprised.
Yeah, but there might be some deals out there. You know, we know some people that had a different, smaller configuration, and Tesla said, hey, we'll give you this slightly better configuration for the same price. And obviously that's a good thing to do. Samuel Fink says, "What are your this is more about battery day. Q1 is weak quarter and it's second best ever. What do you think?" I don't know. That's kind of what we talked about, I guess.
Well, it's more about like what we thought it could be than before the whole coronavirus and everything. That's a perception.
Yeah, it could have been kind of crazy when you think about it.
Yeah. Apparently sales in the US were extremely strong before this whole thing happened. My sources said that they link it to the Cybertruck. The Cybertruck really pushed Tesla to a whole new level, especially in the U.S. in terms of reach. Like, pretty much everyone knew about Tesla to a degree, but that piqued the interest of so many more people.
Yeah.
And even if they don't buy the truck, they're like, all right, let's see what else Tesla has in stock. Like, all right, they have them all three. Oh, cool.
All right, so Brent McKinney is asking about the snowpack in California, which is apparently smaller than normal. But I think last year they were a bit much bigger, so they're starting from a higher point. Wouldn't at least their megapack project for California be considered critical?
So what do you mean by snowpack? I'm not aware.
I mean, maybe he's talking about electricity generation with dams. I don't know.
So snowpack, like we're talking about, like the snows in the mountains melting, and does California has any significant amount of hydropower?
I mean, I know that Hoover Dam's a little bit, but that's mostly Las Vegas.
Yeah, they do get some power, but it's not in California. The biggest battery project that Tesla has in the world right now is in California with PG&E in the Monterey County. So, yeah, there's battery coming down in California for sure.
SAI says Q1 is weak quarter historically and now second best quarter ever. What will Q3, Q4, and Q2 Corona be?
Should be good. I think Corona might affect Q3 and Q4 too. Right. Like, maybe not in production. I believe they're not going to let the factory be shut down for so long, but demand's going to be affected because that plunged us into a recession, I'm sure.
Yeah, and I bet Elon kind of wishes he had his robots doing most of the assembly at this point rather than going back to human beings. But that didn't happen, so. Mick says, we talked about this.
That was a good call, yeah.
Fandy Monroe, hadn't heard that nickname.
Yeah, no, it's Sandy Monroe.
Let's see. Philip's a fan.
Thank you, Philip.
And says, Cybertruck, considering CV COVID-19, what kind of delays are you expecting versus the original timeline, the end of 2021, for DM and Tri-Motor? I don't know. I think maybe a little delay at least.
I wouldn't call any delay just yet. I mean, we've been talking about the fact that there's a delay if Tesla is in Elon are really concerned long term about or mid term about the impact of the virus plunging a recession being a cash crunch because they need to build a factory for it and invest like probably over $1 billion. So there's a delay if that, but in terms of timelines, I mean, they haven't started construction on it. We expect them to start soon and to announce a location soon. So I think that timeline is not really affected. That it's more whether Tesla wants to spend the cash on it now or not. I think that's more the question. If they get it, then that may be like a good time to like negotiate a nice, a sweet incentive deal for Tesla to build a factory somewhere. It's like, yeah, like your region has been affected for it. Like I'll invest $1 billion if you give me a $1 billion package, and then yeah, whatever it is. And it might be a good opportunity for us to negotiate in the sector that really wants to boost their economy at this time.
Yeah. All right. Philip Florence, how are the Tesla devs working now? I'm assuming from home on a computer.
Yeah. they're definitely still working on that. All the neural net people are still at work. They're just working from home.
Yeah. Don sure loves his pollution. That's true.
Yeah.
COVID-19 attacks lungs. President of the U.S. Yes, let's add more particulate matter to the air.
Yep, that's the reasoning here.
Yeah, it may benefit Tesla in the long run, but that's not going to be a fun long run. FC.
Yeah, that's the problem. Tesla is there to accelerate the adoption of electric vehicles, not to own the entire adoption of electric vehicles.
So FCA is going to be, Philip says, FCA is going to be the last one of the Detroit 3 to deliver an electric pickup. They will be in a world of pain if GM and Ford have an electric pickup and not counting Cybertruck. Yeah, I mean, at that point, I don't even know if the company is still running.
But yeah.
That's a good point.
I just want them to at least give them the $1 billion that they have to give Tesla in Europe for the emission standards, if they don't reduce the emission standards because of the coronavirus. Oh, boy.
And then Brett comes back and says, yes, electricity generation. This was about the 53% snowpack. Yeah. I didn't know this. 13.5% of electricity in California is hydroelectric. So that's pretty
true. Oh, that's more than I would have thought for sure. Yeah.
So, I guess having some backups for those very hot summer days would be good.
Yeah, because hydroelectricity is good for controlling the flow of electricity, and you can just if the dam are strong enough, you can delay some electricity power and whatnot. So there is some storage capacity with the electricity, but combining it with batteries makes a lot of sense.
All right, that's all for today in the questions
department. Yes. Yeah, thank you for your question, guys. Thank you for watching on YouTube. You can give us a subscribe or a like. It's always appreciated. Thank you for listening on your podcast app. And you can leave us a review on your podcast app. That always helps too. And we appreciate your time. We know that it's difficult these days to stay optimist and just not to succumb to boredom, really. So I hope we helped a little, and we'll see you same place, same time next week. Bye-bye.